times he sort of just like threw out some basic contours and left us to learn the sugya on our own when we have time. But he started by pointing out, I've just been reading our sugya, that yefshar doesn't literally yefshar, yefshar means convenient. Okay, that's pretty much shot in the sugya. And then he got into Dovashin Miskabin. You mentioned the Rama, we'll come back to that. First he went into some issues that he was not going to discuss in Dovashin Miskabin, such as the, sort of he had four gradations of Dovashin Miskabin from, probably Mulacha not happening to 50-50 to probably Mulacha happening to a Psik Risha, which he says, okay, it doesn't mean 100%, but I mean it's close enough to 100%. I mean, nothing's 100%. Psik Risha, we know, is a whole Sugya Kayadua. This is sort of classic Machlokas Rav Shimon Rav Yehuda. Psik Risha, we know, is Moveh Rav Shimon. He pointed out that there's some discussion in Shon Rechon about the other two cases, which we're not going to get into now, which is, A, what if it's probably going to happen? You know, something like what they call a chronicle curve of lipstick ratio, you know?
Would Rav Shimon be Oser if it's not a lipstick ratio that's probably going to happen? And the question of what if it's probably not going to happen, would Rav Yehuda the Matir, this he pointed out, that according to Rashi, is a Machlokes Tanoim in Beitza, Chaf Gimel on the Beis, was it?
If you look, in Chaf Gimel on the Beis, they have two Tanoim according to Rav Yehuda, who argue about pushing a baby stroller on Shabbos on where, you know, it will make an indentation in the ground. And at least Rashi says that their argument is that it probably won't dig a ditch. It'll probably just press. It probably won't dig. But it might, and so that's Machlokas or Yehuda would be Matir. It probably won't happen. Okay, that is one issue, which we're not going to get into. The other issue, which we didn't get into so much.
Are you on that Rashi?
He didn't say. What else would be the Machlokas in the Tutan or Malibu or Yehuda? Theoretically, you could, I guess, speculate a million things. So I'm not sure. I don't recall what everyone else says there and based off of Will Bates. But Rashi's pretty clear that he thinks that's Gufa and Machlok Sanam, they're in Beit Zedav Chav Gimel on the base. The other issue, he said, was the famous Machlok Zerashi and Tosin in two places, Beit Zalam and Gimel and Aleph. That's the more well-known one, Bechoros Chav Heim and Aleph is the less well-known one. They're both discussed in the Beis HaLevi summary of this issue in the very first seminar in the Beis HaLevi. That's what makes them classic Mechoros. The question is, what it like classic Psik Risha is, sorry, classic Dovashin Miskabin is two actions. You know, one on Miskabin and one on Eino Miskabin. What about a case where I have one action but two results? You know, one result on Miskabin and the other result I am not Miskabin. Such as the case in Beitza, at least, is I build a. I think Rav Lichtenstein might have used a pool table as the example. Is that what he
meant?
A ping pong table. Sorry, ping pong table. Obviously, the Amoraim are not thinking specifically of ping pong.
He was thinking of the platter on horses.
Apparently, horses is the technical phrase for the bottom part of the table.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
That's
but
we're not literally a horse.
What? No. Horse is like a technical phrase for those things. Yeah, I think I might have actually heard it once, not from Blitzing also. Anyway, Kitzer, you're trying to make a tabletop surface to play ping pong on. You're not at all trying to make a god, right? You're trying to make a floor for the ping pong ball. You're not at all trying to make a god because you're not planning to use the space under the table. But, obviously, since you're making the floor high up so you can play ping pong properly, it's also a roof as well as a floor. So this is a famous Machlokes Rashi Tosir. Rashi says this is called Dovashin Miskabin, even though it's all one action, but since there's different results to that action, it's a floor for ping pong, and a roof, theoretically, were someone to want to make a little, like, a hiding place down there, a storage area down there, correct? So Rashi says that's called a Dovashin Miskabin. And Tosa says, no, this is not a Dovashin Miskabin. Rather, if anything, it is a Malach Shem Tzuchim Gufa, perhaps. This is not a darshin miskavi, because you're miskaving to the action. So this is a very important question in applying darshin miskavi. Clearly, there are two different actions, like classic examples he mentions of the nazir, right? I'm combing my hair, and without getting into, you know, the idea that somebody should bring up, that maybe sometimes you want to pull out hairs, but let's assume, honestly, you don't, you want to comb your hair, and you also might pull out hairs. Those are two totally different actions. One is just, you know, making it neatly go to one side, and the other is pulling it out. Or classic dragging a bench. I want to get the bench from point A to point B, and it might also dig a ditch. That's classic Dershin Miskavi. What if I want to do something, just that thing has two results? There aren't two different masim. Where the line is settled, but you know, there aren't two different verbs like pulling a bench and digging. It's just you're putting the surface down, and there's both a floor, which is perfectly mutter on Shabbos, and a roof, which is perfectly usher. That Rashi also considers that Dovashin Miskavi, while Tosa says no, that's what's called Lakshin Sukha. That's the difference between Dovashin Miskavi and Lakshin Sukha Gufa. That's totally a Dovashin Miskavi, and Rav Shimon would not be making for that reason. Okay, so that is a. Lisa Leib discussed that. That's also something which you didn't get into, and we assumed, like Tosos, most people seem to assume, unlike Shad and the Gemara, Rashi assumes like Shad and the Gemara in a couple places, Kedaka Makodesh. Most people seem to assume, at least certainly by now, I think it's like Tosos, I haven't taken a poll with Rishonim, that's not called Dabashem Miskavi. That's called Melachshim Sikla Gufa. Dabashem Miskavi means there are two different actions that are happening. He also pointed out that the Rav Chaim, the famous Rav Chaim in Shabbos, Tel Shabbos, Rek Yud, discussed Dabashem Miskavi, but he didn't get into that either. I think so, because they also argue in Bechor, I mean, theory, I see the Svar, but they also argue in Bechor's name. It seems to be the same Machlokas, and Beis Halevi says the same Machlokas, seems to be right, about the Isra of Giza Bekutchim. What if you are cutting hair off an animal, but you're not trying to be Giza? So Rashi says that's Dovashin Miskavin. Tosa says, what do you mean? You're cutting off hair. It's the same action. The fact that you don't want the hair to be off the animal necessarily, but you are cutting off the hair, so that's still a problem. You're just cutting off for technical reasons, like, I remember the example there, but maybe like in Parah Aduma, the edges were black, but if you cut it, but you cut it off or something. Okay. Now, what we mostly dealt with is, what are Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon arguing about when it comes to Dovashin Miskavi? And we said there are two fundamentally different ways of understanding their machlokas. Two fundamentally different ways of understanding what Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are arguing about. One is, it's a matter of, you know, they're arguing about an issue of chumra bakula, should we be machmer or mekel, meaning, am I allowed to take a chance? If I'm an innocent, frum person who's not trying to go against Hashem's will, I'm just trying to do regular, nice, normal, neutral things, but I'm taking a chance of Aveira. Am I allowed to take a chance of Aveira? Am I not allowed to take a chance of doing an Aveira? And here, Rabbi Yehuda is Machmir, and he's Machmir, and Rabbi Shimon is Mekel. That is one way, he thought maybe the Rambam sounded a little that way. That is one way of understanding the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. They're talking whether it be Machmir or Mekel in issues of taking chances of getting to Aveira. And then obviously, he pointed out a little later this year, that would tie into a lot of famous discussions like Machlokas, Rambam, and Rash Baran, whether Safi Daraisa is Lachumra Minatora or Lakula Minatora, means, what does the Torah think about taking chances? You know, and maybe particularly when I'm just, not that I'm actually, you know, trying to get myself into a chance of violating the Torah, but I'm just trying to mind my own business, then perhaps, you know, we're Mater taking chances a little. And what if the Malach happens? It's okay, because you're allowed to take the chance. That is one way of understanding Rabbi Yehuda Shimon. The other way that Rabbi Yehuda Shimon is about they're arguing about the relationship between Machshava and Maaseh. It's not that Rabbi Shimon says you're allowed to take a chance of doing an aveira, or Rabbi Yehuda says you're not allowed to take a chance of doing an aveira. It's
that Rosh Hashanah says what would happen is not an Aveira.
And Rabbi Yehuda says what would happen is an Aveira. They both agree you can't take a chance of doing an Aveira. You can't even take a 50-50 chance. Maybe you can't even take a 40% chance or a 30% chance of doing an Aveira. But the question is, if you did drag a ditch, would that be an Aveira or not? Rabbi Yehuda says, well, it looks like an Aveira to me. You dug a ditch on Shabbos. And Rabbi Shimon says it is not an Aveira. Why not? Because Rabbi Shimon says that you can, Rabbi Lichtenstein called it divorce, meaning you can say this maisa didn't have kavana, right? Was without kavana, meaning we don't say, whatever you're doing with kavana. No. You can really say it isn't without kavana, and without kavana,
at least the lechora, what we would say is that without kavana, I didn't do it. My arm did it.
Right, so he says, first of all, yeah, we can really say you did it without kavana. We don't say whatever you're doing with kavana because you know it might happen. We can really say you did it without kavana. And when you do something without kavana, you didn't do it. Your arms might have done it, might have happened, but you didn't do it. Like Rav Chaim says in the first paragraph about the Tosos, someone pushed you onto a tinok, then you didn't kill the tinok. That was just how your body happened to be the, you know, vehicle, the weapon. So likewise, if this ditch gets done without my kavana, I didn't dig the ditch. My arms happen to be the way that happenstance and mikra dug this ditch. But I didn't do it. That gets to a very philosophical issue of, you know, what's I? Is I my body or is I my brain, et cetera. But assuming I is my brain, you know, and my brain wasn't with this. Well, I mean, that makes more sense anyway. So then I didn't do it. And what did Rabbi Yehuda hold? Rabbi Yehuda holds that either what it's called, you can't support. When you do a maisa, you did it with kavana. Maybe he thinks, no. You really, whatever you did, you did with kavana. Or, more fascinatingly, right, this is really what we focused on. Or, kavana is irrelevant. A physical maisa is a maisa. And if we take this perspective, that, I mean, what are they arguing on? Say they both agree. Taka, I can say I dug the ditch without kavana. Reasonable. I really dug the ditch without kavana. The question is, what's the role of kavana in, in action? Okay, he mentioned a little later on that a lot of philosophers discuss this. You know, is the ikur of what we're doing in terms of mitzvahs and averos our kavana or our objective action, objective results of that action? But maybe that's good for the close to Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon, whether kavana is what makes it an action or whether the physical action is what makes it an action. Now, where would this come across in our Gemara? If it's just a matter of the Machbar and Mako on the possibility of getting into Aveira, or fundamentally different ways of looking at the relationship between Achshava and Maisa. So I'll be simple. Rav Lichtenstein wanted to say this seems to be the machloksin Rav and Abaye in the Lishna Basra. Maybe there's a machloksin Rav and Abaye in the Lishna Basra. Right? What's going on here? This is Abaye in the Lishna Basra. What do you say? Rav Yehuda can also be a kula. Right? That's the only place where Abaye in the Lishna Basra. We find this idea of Rav Yehuda being the kula, and that's precisely why Rava jumps down Abaye's throat. So Abaye says, look, bein l'kula, bein l'chumrah. Just like Rav Yehuda is more machmir, and he says, when you're not miskaven, we don't care whether you're miskaven or not. An action is an action. Likewise, he's more mako. He says, if there's a heter v'yefsher, and Rav Lichtenstein did not get into why there'd be a heter v'yefsher, but if there's a heter v'yefsher, then the fact that you're miskaven
The fact that you're miskaven doesn't change anything. So just like not having kavanah doesn't change the fact you did a physical action. Likewise, having kavanah doesn't change the fact that this was not this is a justified physical action because it was the efshar, and the efshar is a reasonable heter. So Abai is clearly thinking that Rabbi Yehuda just says kavanah has nothing to do with actions, and usually that makes him be machmir, but sometimes that makes him be meitel. He says the heter v'efshar. The heter v'efshar is regardless of what you're thinking, because your thinking has nothing to do with what kind of action you did. And then maybe what Rava says to him. What does Rava say to him? He says Rabbi Yehuda is only lachomer. He says, what are you talking about? Rabbi Yehuda can never become a kula. Rabbi Yehuda can only be a chomer. So maybe what's Rava saying? What Rava's saying to him is that Rabbi Yehuda is not saying let's just look at things in an upside down, sideways perspective from what Rav Shimon thinks. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that I'm machmir. I think that unless it's very, very justified, you shouldn't take chances of getting into an avira. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda told me to machmir, not mekel. So it seems to be Alpi Pashtos. The simplest way to read the Lishna Basra is that Abaye is saying Rabbi Yehuda has a different perspective on what it means for people to do things, and he thinks that depends on their arms and legs, not their brains. Bein lechomer, bein lekula. Usually lechomer, but sometimes lekula. Rabbi says no. Rabbi Yehuda is only machmir. It's not that he's taking a different perspective on life. It's that he's saying I'm a little more machmir, and I don't think that it's so easy to justify taking a chance of getting into aviros.
Maybe this is what he's saying, but could you fit the two opinions in which the Basra Rabba and Abai into the two modes we had for Rabbi Yehuda? Meaning, a Rabba would say that you're chayav because it's irrelevant what your kavana is. You only care about the ma'aseh, and yesh or lesh doesn't matter. And Abai would say, no, because it's low esher, so that shows that you don't really have kavana.
Maybe. I mean, that's not what Rav Lechem is saying, although then you have to ask why Rav would be moded by Yefshar below Kamechavim. But perhaps that's not the direction of Rav Lechem is going. If you take this approach to our Sugya, then it seems to be the Maskan of our Sugya, we all know we pass like Rav against the Bayit, it's not Yal Kagam. So the Maskan of our Sugya, we would say, they're arguing out a matter of more technical issue of Chumra or Kula, whether, look, we have cases where there's some justification for taking your chances and getting into dangerous situations, such as efshar, the fact that you need to live your life and you know you can't go out of your way all the time, the fact that lo kamachaven, that you know you're really just trying to do the right thing and you just you know you have no bad intentions. Those are mitigating factors to say let's not be so machmir on you. And they're arguing. Rabbi Yehuda says be so machmir on you. Rabbi Shimon says don't be so machmir on you. And that's what Rav is saying. They're arguing about not fundamental nature of the human being and his actions. They're arguing about whether factors like efsharus and kavana are make you like a good boy, and therefore we shouldn't be so harsh on you in terms of the unintended side effects that you might create. However, in a lot of Rishonim, they don't choose to read it this way, and they think, no, when Rav says Rabbi Yehuda is only the chumra, he doesn't mean to say, I think it's an issue of chumra kula. Maybe he really means to agree with Abaye. This is just, he doesn't mean to say, oh, I disagree with you because I think it's just an issue of chumra kula, like the simplest understanding of his wording. He just means to say, I agree with your lumdus, I just wouldn't take it to this conclusion because I don't have precedent to take it to this particular conclusion. Not because I really care about chumra and kula. He just meant to say, if you don't have precedent, Rabbi Yehuda, to take it to your particular conclusion, so your idea might be right, but I just don't want to take it that far. And this we see that even in Maskanas HaSugya, according to a number of Rishonim, such as the Yichusei Tanan Ba'amorayim, I have to admit that I share Rav Lichtenstein's excitement at the fact that this cool Torah Rishonim book, which in general, I think Rav Lichtenstein has been trying to recommend all year long, so you should all take that recommendation to heart, because so if you know Shas Rishonim Kol, then it's really not as important. But otherwise, it's like, you know, so you see Rishonim on the daf, but lobbed up in terms of substantive understanding the sugya, that who says always the Rishonim on the daf will have all the important things to think about, and Rishonim someplace else won't have even more important things to say that they didn't happen to write on the daf. You know, there's no Rashba and Sachem on the daf, except in the black compass. But, you know, and other, you know, random things, which might be, you know, open Yichud's number might be nothing new, or might be, you know, you didn't know there was a Sefer Eitzer or a Yah or something that says something really important. So it's a very cool book. One of the cool things has Yichud's number, which no one actually has the real book of. So the Yichud's number here, he didn't really get into, you know, befrat his whole point, but he clearly understood that the machlokes of Rehuna Rishimot is about the fundamental nature of the relationship between Machshav and Maisa, and not about being more Machra or more Mekel. How do we know that? Because he starts the whole discussion, he starts bringing in Zvachim without getting into all the details of, you know, whether the Machshava goes by the Oved or by the Kohen, which is really, you know, a little beyond what we're tackling right now. But when he basically says that Dovashin was Kavein, he thinks the Psach of Rehuna Rishimot, or even the Sheets of Rehuna Rishimot, should depend on what area of halacha we're talking about. In areas of halacha where the Torah gave chashivas to machshava, then dovashin was kavein zmotah. In areas of halacha where the Torah didn't give the chashivas to machshava, it should be aser. So in kavshim, there's chashivas to machshava because there's psul of pigol and the shalol lishma, etc. Therefore, dovashin was kavein should be mutter. But let's say in other random areas of halacha, maybe dovashin was kavein should be aser. Now, without getting into how he gets that all to work out, but like, just because in Kutchim there's a soul of pigle, like if I think I'm going to eat it in 3 days or 12 miles away, or, you know, I think the chatas should be an ola or whatever, what did that have to do with Darish Inimus Kavein and everything that has to do with the Beis HaMikdash? The point is that since we see there's an important role for Machshava in the Beis HaMikdash, therefore we see that the Beis HaMikdash actions are more defined by Kavana than by your arms and legs. So clearly what he's saying, as opposed to some other random area of halacha, where we don't find any special rules of machshava, where your actions would be defined by your arms and legs, by your physicality. So clearly, Yechuzi Tamarim understands that there are, Rabbi Yehuda Rishim are arguing about the fundamental nature of the relationship between kavana and action, between the physical and the mental. And therefore, he has an interesting chiddush that any time you find an area of halacha where your thoughts have some role, even if it's a totally different role, like thinking piggle, not necessarily thinking about what you're doing, but that shows that thoughts have a special role in Kutchin. Also very fascinating philosophically, ashkafically, that in Kutchin have a different relationship between, you know, the ruach and the guf than other areas, which maybe wouldn't surprise us ashkafically, but not for now. Okay.
And Rabbi Shimon would agree, or Rabbi Yehuda would agree?
He seems to say that even Rabbi Shimon should only be Mekel in areas of halacha where we find that the Torah gave chashivas to what you're thinking. Like Shabbos, where it says, Melech Machsheves Asur Torah, and Kadshim, where there's Psulim Machshava, and then he has to get it to work out. What? Maybe the machlokas is, even in those areas where the Torah gave chashivas to machshava, that only mean that the Torah gave chashivas to machshava in a very limited sphere, such as pigol and shalol lishma, or does that mean we should change the way we look at the whole, you know, area of halacha? I guess, l'chora. Okay, then we got into the question of the relationship between Shabbos and Kol Tzar Kula. You know, leaving aside the Yichusit and Amram Arayim for now, who has a very, obviously, unique perspective. And then we want to say that maybe the Rambam, although, you know, it wasn't really a proof, but the Rambam Blashom sounded like it was more a question of, you know, could you do something which might take a chance on an Aveira? Maybe that would fit the other side of the Hakira, although that wasn't really the Hechleit, because the Rambam was just saying a very general, vague Blashom. Now, we got into the issue of Shabbos versus Kol Tzar Kula. So the question is there a difference between Shabbos and Kol Tzar Kula, right, in terms of Dovashin Miskavin, and why might there be a difference in Shabbos and Kol Tzar Kula? Because of Melech Machsheves Asur Torah. So we find that is not clear. Let me just go a little bit of a different direction. One thing is very clear throughout Shas. The sugya of Dovashin Miskavin is applied equally throughout Shas in Shabbos. It happens to be that a lot of the cases are in Shabbos. That's just because, you know, practically things come up a lot in Shabbos. There's 39 melachos, so there could be a lot of cases of Dovashin Miskavin in everyday actions. So it comes up a lot in Shabbos, but it comes up a lot in Kol Tzar Kula also.
such as one of the classic cases, Nozer Chofei from Mephases, right? The Nozer Shimpum is here and he might pull hair out. And Shatnez, like we see in our Sugya, etc. So clearly, the Ikaron, Darshin was Kavein, is the Sugya applies both in Shabbos and in Kol Torah Kula. But could there still be a difference? So yes, we find two shittos in the Rishonim which say there is a difference. What are the two shittos in the Rishonim that say there's a difference? Number one, shita of... what? Shiltos? Tosfos, say that quotes. Tosfos, and maybe Rashi, I think, also hints at this, says, etc. Tosfos, the Ode, says that the Rabbi Yehuda, Davashayim Skavin, is Aser Mida Oraisa in Kala Torah Kula, and only Aser Mida Rabbanan on Shabbos. So that's one place we see that Davashayim Skavin might be more mutter on Shabbos than Torah Kula. The others, the Shita of the Rush and others, which within the Das of the Aruch, which says, the fear of Shimon, a psik resha, delo nichale, would be mutter on Shabbos, and usher cholator kula. Usher probably even midoraisa, it sounds like, on cholator kula. Okay, the Aruch himself actually doesn't say this. It's very clear if you look up the Aruch inside. Not sure if Old Rishon had an Aruch inside, or maybe they're just discussing a theoretical shita. But the Rush and other Rishon seem foolish. The Aruch saying this hands up segregation delo nichale. You know, again, I'm not sure. You have to be dyke in the Lushan, and maybe you also just have to think about it. Did they think this was the Aruch Shita, in which case they were mistaken, technically, or were they just saying this should be the Aruch Shita? So I'm a little misuffic, but we have an Aruch, and if you look inside, clearly you didn't hold this. But they say, Segregation of Nikla is Mutter and Shabbos, and us are in Kol HaTorah Kula. So we do find that the Shem Miskat might be different in Shabbos than in Kol HaTorah Kula, and why would there be a difference? Obviously, because of the principle of Meleches Machsheves Asra Torah. So the principle of Meleches Machsheves Asra Torah. And here, you know, you sort of have the same question to ask about Meleches Machsheves Asra Torah, which is a little bit Rav Chaim is dealing with, although he's dealing with a very specific sense. Is Meleches Machsheves Asra Torah just mean more Makel and Shabbos than in other things? That's what a lot of people think, right? That's what I always thought when I was a little kid. I said, you look all over most of Shas, says, Melech Machsheves Asra Torah, so this is Pater on Shabbos, and, you know, Mesas Mechulam Marais is Chayim, but on Shabbos, Pater, Melech Machsheves Asra Torah, and the Gemara says that Mekalkal is Pater, Melech Machsheves Asra Torah. So maybe Melech Machsheves Asra Torah is just a Ptor. What does it mean, just a Ptor? What it's saying is that, you know, work that's lacking a certain professionalism is Pater on Shabbos. It's not saying Shabbos fundamentally, the nature of a human being and what he does in the world on Shabbos has to be different than Kol Torah Kula. So you might think, again, this seems to be only a half amina, you might think it's just a Kula, right? Sort of like one possibility you said there. That Melech Machsheves is just a Kula. Just a Kula? What does it mean, just a Kula? It has to do with professionalism. Okay, something not so professional, you have a Torah on Shabbos. But that's not true. It's just a different way of looking at Masim on Shabbos, Bein Lekula, Bein Lechumra. How do we know that it's not just the Torah? Because of the famous Gemara in Bava Kama, Daf Samach Amud Aleph, which, I don't know, I'm an old Masechta Shabbos, and somehow no one ever taught me that Gemara until I learned Bava Kama. Yes, that's why it's good to learn all of Shas. But Bava Kama, Daf Samach Amud Aleph, as a kid, I was very surprised when I got to Bava Kama Daf Samach Amud Aleph. Like, isn't Bava Kama Daf Shabbos just a Kula? But I guess no, just you think something doesn't make it true. So in the famous Gemara, Bava Kama Daf Samach Amud Aleph deals with the Avalach of Eish, and has a certain case. Okay, it's a little unclear when you read the Gemara. You have to read your Shonim carefully to understand Pshat and Sugya. L'chor, what it's talking about is if you have a Chetza of non-Eish, let's say a sort of smoldering flame that's not necessarily a Chetza of an Eish, and the wind blows it, you know, you sort of help the wind blow it into a chetz of eish, then, at least according to Ashi there, you're putter, because that's only like grum of an izikin, right? So if you use the wind to help you create the Av Hamazik,
Right? Now, obviously, we don't mean if the wind spread the fire. The wind spreading the fire is kohach and urvos, the very first law of Bavakam. Of course you're chayiv, you know, raisa. What we mean is if the wind helps create the fire, right? That's the subtle difference. Just understand the context of Bavakam. If the wind helps, and if you purposely use the wind, you work with the wind to create the fire, that's a tur brahma and ezekiel, at least according to Ravashi here in that Gemara. So anyways, what are Zohar, Baruch, and Sayyata? One of the 39 Avos Malacha is Dafi using the wind, right? That Zohar is winnowing, right? In the old days, they didn't have computers and everything, but they were still very clever, and they knew a lot of important laws of science. And what they do is, what is Zohar? It's actually really cool, especially like, if you think they've been doing it for like thousands of years. If they have the wheat and the chaff, and the good part is the kernel, and the bad part is all the straw and chaff and all the light parts, so they just take a big pitchfork. That's what pitchforks are really for. Not for like, you know, attacking when you're like witches and stuff, Frankenstein or whatever. And they would throw everything up on a windy day, and the wind would blow the light parts 10 meters, and the heavy parts only 5 meters, because the wind blows light things further than heavy things. So basically, you throw it off in the wind, and all the wheat kernels that you wanted to eat would be close to you, and all the chaff to the garbage would be far away from you, and it was a gevaldige chachma. And that's one of the 39 Avos Malacha. So, we rarely do that nowadays, but maybe like if you use a centrifuge or something, could be that would be b'chlal, the Av Malacha of Zohar, right? Because it's a similar, I think, the similar idea where you have a lot of like momentum or something, and it separates heavy things from light things. So after that would be the Av Malacha of Zohar, you know, the only, I mean, you could do it nowadays. You could put broken peas and pods and stuff in your hand and go, but people don't. But it could be that when they use the centrifuges in factories, that, and scientists, maybe that's a classic Av Malacha of Zohar. Really? Cool. Okay, look at that. All right. So what does the Gemara say, though? So why on Shabbos are you chayiv with grama? For an Ezekiel, we call this a ptur, grama of an Ezekiel. For Shabbos, we call you chayiv nisa. And it says, well, that's not Shabbos, that's for Torah, meaning really it's grama, and grama is potter. However, since this is the machshavadik way to do it, therefore you're chayiv on Shabbos, it turns grama into a maisa. So what do we see? Malas Mashav is not only a ptur. It's not only a kula, it's also a chumra. What Malas Mashav means is that if you do an action, but you don't really have a good machshava behind it, that doesn't count on Shabbos. And if you do a non-action, but it does have a good machshava behind it, then that does count on Shabbos. So it's saying that in Shabbos, we don't look at whether you did the Maisa or not, because it's Zohar you didn't do the Maisa, and the Kalkul you did the Maisa. Rather, we looked at whether you had a machshava that influenced your actions, and in Zohar of Ruch Masayot, you did have a machshava that guided your actions, and Makalkul, you did not have machshava that influenced your actions. So there we see that in Shabbos also, when you want to look at machshavas, which might affect our question, it's not just a kula in Malach machshavas. It is a fundamentally different way of looking at what you do. We look at what you do, not based on your physical actions on Shabbos, but based on your productive kavana. Now, back to our sugya. Okay, now we got back to our sugya, the next part of Shir. And we said, okay, so our sugya is dealing with the relationship between the factor of Miskavi and the factor of Yefshar. We didn't get so much into the factor of Yefshar. We just pointed out that, okay, there's obviously four scenarios. Yefshar become a Chavin is for sure Usher. Yefshar below come a Chavin is almost for sure Mutter, depending on how you read Kuli Alma in the Lishna Kama. And the in-between cases are what are seem to be most controversial in the sugya, Machlokas Abai and Rava, according to one Lishna or the other Lishna. And this seems a little parallel to the discussion on Shabbos. In Shabbos, they also had some of these factors. They didn't use the word Efter Yefshar, but they did use the issue of big benches and small benches, which seems to be saying the same thing in different words. And that's why Tosos and many others assumed that our sugi is the exact same sugi Shabbos Daf Chof Tes, that when it comes to the relationship between Efshar and Efshar and Mechavin and Loka Mechavin, right, all the sugi and Shas are the exact same sugi with the exact same shitas. However, Rav Lichtenstein was very troubled by this. I mean, not that it's wrong, Tosos really seems to assume it, and so do other Rishonim, but it's a little radical, especially in which the Basra for Abaye, to be matter in Shabbos and in other areas of the Torah, really you can be matter Efshar become a chavin. Remember, Efshar doesn't mean impossible, inconvenient. Yeah, if it's inconvenient and I'm miskavin for the melacha, that's okay on Shabbos. That would be, you know, I really want to dig a ditch. And, you know, I have a heavy bench, which is hard to schlep unless I drag it. So that's okay on Shabbos. That would be a big, maybe yes, but that would be a big chiddush. So he wanted to say, now, he attributed this to Rabbi David. I know in my shir in the morning, I think I attributed this to Avin Azel. But I looked at the Rabbi David. I wasn't sure exactly where he was medayik in Rabbi David, so I have to ask him. But in any case, you know, if we just called that as a nickname, he said that maybe what's different about our sugya is that no, our sugya is not exactly the same sugya as there. Not every kula in our sugya can be transferred over to Shabbos and to Kol Torah kula, because over there you're actually doing the action, while over here it's hana boli and makorcha. But he says the hana floods you; you don't go and take the hana. Rather, the hana washes over you. If you assume that when it comes to hana, this is a big. This is a big issue, right? This is, okay, ties into a little to Shlomo Fisher here in terms of Sasu Klom Marais. Shir Klom, I guess. Yes, Shir Klom. The question is, what when it comes to Hana'ah, what's Asr? Is the result that you got Hana'ah that you are now improved what's Asr? Or no, the Maisa of a Maisa Hana'ah that's Asr? So in Cholam Varayis, that's a good Chakira. Is that the result of being full or having a certain, you know, sensual experience that's Asr? Or no, the Maisa of Ve'ilu Archila that's Asr. Likewise, in all Hanos, you can ask, is just the fact that I'm now enriched that's Asr, the fact that I'm benefited that's Asr, or the Maisa Hanos? So if you assume that it's the Maisa Hanos that's Asr, then we understand in our sugya why, no, maybe our sugya is a unique sugya and has different phraseology than in Shabbos and has different shittos of Amoron than in Masech Shabbos. Because over here, it's not so clear that you're doing a Maisa Hana. In Shabbos, it's very clear that you're doing a Maisa of digging a ditch. You're digging the ditch. You're just digging without Kavana. Over here, you're not actually like taking the Isra Hana and getting Hana from it. The Hana is rather taking you. And therefore, maybe, in our case, the question isn't just the regular question of Dabashem Miskavim. It is a unique situation of Dabashem Miskavim. Because the question is, do you have here a Maisa Hana, or do you not have here a Maisa Hana? I know the Lashon I used the other day was that, you know, in the Sefer Shabbos, you're definitely doing a Maisa Melacha. The question is, can we say, since you did it without Kavana, then it really, you didn't do the Maisa Hana, it just happened. Over here, are you really not doing a Maisa Hana? The question is, can we say that maybe if you were miskaven or some other factor, l'chumra, that we can find and consider and somehow, you know, interpret the Metzias in a way that you did a Maisa Hana? So really, over here, the machlokas might be, within Avayi Rava, not exactly the regular Dabashim miskaven, but... did you do a Maisa Hana, or did you not do a Maisa Hana? And what would be the machlokas over here in our sugya? On the one hand, you could say, you know, that you didn't do a Maisa Hana. But on the other hand, you could say, and there are, I guess, two questions here, either you could say that the halicha is the Maisa Hana? No, even though halicha is not, no, it doesn't sound like a Maisa Hana the way dragging a heavy object that is, protrudes into the ground sounds like a Maisa digging. But maybe halicha is a Maisa Hana. Or even if halicha is not a Maisa Hana, causing yourself to be in a situation of Hana, you know, even if you don't have a specific Maisa Hana, but since you caused yourself to get Hana'ah, that is the Isser. So you can have subtly different ways, which are not really necessarily crucial for understanding the sugya, but it could be arguing over, like, you need a maisa hana, is halicha maisa hana, or is halicha not a maisa hana? Or it could be, no, do you need a maisa hana? Or maybe it's enough that just you had a gram of, you caused yourself to get hana. But in any case, maybe this is a very unique sugya because it's a specific sugya about ba'alolo of Adam al-Karcha, like the title of the sugya says. I mean, the title of the sugya is not just Hamsi the Hate Hemsi, but is the yisod of the sugya. And this is what the Lutzin was Madaik in Rabbi David. That it's a unique case because they're arguing whether you have a Maisa Hana here in the first place or whether you don't have a Maisa Hana in the first place. Either, like, can you call the Halicha Maisa Hana, or just, you know, can you call being in the situation where you get Hana, that's good enough. A Gram Maisa Hana is also B'chlal, the Isser. Now, if so, if this is really what's going on here, that we're talking about that our sugi is unique, then you want to say, look, maybe our sugi is only talking about some hanas, not other hanas. What kind of hanas are the kind that are balo li adam al karcha? You know, l'chora, you know, eating is not the kind of hana that's balo li adam al karcha. That's the kind of hana that you do, and I guess selling things and, you know, sicha, you know, maybe also. But in particular, I guess when it comes to kol mar v'reach, which is a lot of what's going on in our sugya, those are classic hana b'adam bal karcha, because they're like aim behem mamish. You don't actually do anything, and they just hit you. So you could say that when it comes to our sugya, yeah, some hanos you would apply the kulos of our sugya, like kol mar v'reach. Which, you know, you don't really have any mamish relationship with it, it just happens to you. But in other hanos, then you would not necessarily bring up our sugyas. Maybe other hanos, which are more gross, not in the sense of disgusting, but in the sense of actually, like, sort of tangible and more tangible hanos, then it wouldn't be our sugya. That would be equated to the sugya in Shabbos. Our sugya is to bring more intangible hanos, like kol mare v'reach. And here we went into a little tangent as well in terms of recha milsa. What's the status of reach? Right, so he pointed out there's a whole sugya of recha milsa, which some of you shouldn't bring in here. There are many, very many problematic sugyas about recha milsa if you want to go into it in of itself. For example, Abayin Rava and Avodah Zarah Das Samach Vav argue about Bastiha, and Rav and Levi and Psachim Davayin Vav argue about roasting kosher and treif in the same oven, and all the Rishonim have trouble figuring out what the relationship between those two sugyas is. And you throw in Avodah Zarah Daf Yudbeis, they take as the repulsa that you're not allowed to smell, you know, the nice flowers and stuff of Avodah Zarah, and then Avodah Zarah Daf Memches, where it's not even clear whether that's discussed, the sugya is a sugya about Yisur HaNa or not. But basically, there seems to be a machlokas whether Recha has mamish or not, and there are many factors that are brought into the sugya of Recha Milsa. One of them is what they call as Dover Ha'osoy Lehariach, right? Dover Omeid Lerecha, and many of you shown an answer that, as maybe we've seen, we're learning that Dover Ha'omeid Lehariach Recha is Milsa. Is not Milsa. And then he quoted the famous line from Johnson in Boswell's Life of Johnson, that he said there was some, you know, about a certain site. He didn't say what the site was. It's worth seeing, but not worth going to see. So it's interesting. I mean, there are different madrigas. There are things that are worth smelling versus things that aren't worth smelling. Where do you find this chiluk? You find this chiluk in Sukkah. Right? In Sukkah, there's a din of huktzil mitzvaso. And what do we say? That an esrog you're allowed to smell? Halach l'maisa. For technical reasons, we avoid smelling the esrog when we pick up the arumina because we have suffic brachos that that cropped up in the time of the Rishonim. But midina de Gemara, or clearly, let's say you also have, you know, another sweet smelling fruit which you already made a bracha on, then you can smell the esrog. You can't smell the hadas. Why? Because the hadas is made for reach. Therefore, the huktzel of mitzvaso aser smelling for secular purposes. The esrog is made for eating. Again. Nowadays, I don't know what it's made for, but I guess it's made more for eating than for smelling. And therefore, the huktzel mitzvaso is only for eating and not for smelling. Okay, that has to do with huktzel mitzvaso, not with the Yisur HaNa. That's a special thing of huktzel mitzvaso. But what's the basic point? The basic point is some things are worth smelling, And some things are not worth smelling. They have a nice smell, but they're not worth smelling. Then he points out also there are some things that not just worth smelling, not worth smelling. You know, basically, you pick up the smell, you open it. Some things are worth going to smell, and some things are not worth going to smell, right? And maybe the things are worth smelling, but maybe that's still not called Asel Ariach, unless it's worth going to smell, meaning to go out of your way to smell it. Not just if it's standing there on the table to smell it, but would you actually like go out of your way to smell it? So, when it comes to Reicha, what he just pointed out here is that when it comes to Reicha, there's always two things that you have to figure out. Number one is the sugya of Reicha Milsa, which according to the Asur L'Hariach Rishonin, you have to ask whether Reich is a Hana or not. Meaning, it could be that a certain level of Reich is just not a Hana. After all, kolin mare, not all kolin mare is a hana. If I overhear you talking to your, you know, if I overhear you talking to your wife about who's going to pick up the kid from daycare, that's not hana. And, you know, if I see Ruz use tissues on the desk, that's not hana. Not all kolin mare is hana. Has to have a certain level of chashivas to kol, a symphony and an artwork is hana. Likewise, when it comes to Reicha, the sugya of Reicha Milsa, at least according to many Rishonim, who say it's about whether it's called Hana or not, and that depends on Asur L'Hariach, is that where do you draw the line in terms of Reicha, right? Smelling dirty diapers is clearly not Hana, but where do you draw the line? So it could be that anything nice smelling is within the realm of Hana, or it could be that no. Even with the nice smelling things, maybe you go back to Kolmar as well, it's not just a matter of nice and not nice. It's a matter of is it worth smelling or not worth smelling, or maybe even is it worth going to smell or not worth going to smell. So when it comes to, Rav Lizzie said, like, this is a tangent. When it comes to Reah, and maybe Kolin Mara would be parallel, first you have to ask, is it a Hana'ah? Because clearly, dirty diapers, smelling dirty diapers and looking at used tissues and hearing you argue with your wife over who's picking the kid up from day camp, from daycare, is not Hana'ah. So clearly there's a Kolmar Reach that isn't Hana'ah. Clearly there's a Kolmar Reach that is Hana'ah. You know, at least on a Darbana level, Isura Isbe. Where to draw the line between them is a question. Do you just draw the line by is it nice or bad? Or do you draw the line by is it Asui L'Hariach? What does Asui L'Hariach mean? Worth seeing or worth going to see? Okay, that was a bit of a tangent. Then he pointed out, but once we work out whether it is Hana or is it not Hana, then you have to come on to our sugya and ask, even if it is Hana, just because it is, like the case in our sugya, which clearly are Hana, our sugya is clearly discussing cases which are Hana, otherwise our sugya wouldn't discuss them. So our sugya is only discussing the ones that are Hana, that pass the other sugya, Reicha Milsa and Kol Milsa and Mara Milsa, if you want to invent parallel sugyas, as well. And then our sugya is discussing what we discussed, which is Mitzad, Darshan Miskavim, either the regular Darshan Miskavim like Tosos, or the question of, are you doing a Maisa Hana or are you not doing a Maisa Hana like the Derech we called Rivinir David? Then just the last point, although this is a sugya in and of itself, and this is the Beis Halevi has this discussion, although he comes at it from a slightly different angle in that first Beis Halevi. The question of if Tosos is right, this is the regular sugya of Dovah Shem is copying. They could have brought in all the benches and that they're dragging themselves. Shabbos, they happen to not. Right, they could have brought in the Nazir or Shampoo Mizir, and they happen to not. According to the Derech that we attribute to Rabbeinu David, no, this is a different sugya than Shabbos. This is a sugya of, can you call this a Maisa Hana'ah, or can you not call this a Maisa Hana'ah, because you're not doing anything. So that works very nicely in the beginning of the sugya, even though it doesn't say what we're talking about. Let's assume like Rashi, you're walking by the church when they're burning their Ketores. Or in the Umnen, the Kodesh Kodashim. Or in the people who smell the Beis HaMikdash Ketores. Or, you know, the Chule. At the end of the sugya, they bring in a raya, they try to bring a raya from Mochrik Sos, and that gets a little trickier, because in Mochrik Sos, that doesn't seem to fit this derech that we were medayik in Rabbeinu David. Mochrik Sos, it's not that the Hana is coming to me. I am, that's like dragging the bench, I am putting on the clothing. Right? So, how does Mochrik Sos fit into our sugya? Basically, you also dealt with that in a more fundamental fashion. If you assume like Tosfos against Rashi, then how does it fit into the sugya according to anyone? Because I'm doing the action, I just am not intending the result. So, So this comes into a question of, we mentioned as a side point, the whole question of the nature of Kalayim. You know, do you compare Kalayim to Usur HaNa'ah or not? You know, Rabbi Kiva Eger is a Shut, where he asks whether you could say Mis'asik is Chayav by Kalayim, in terms of, like, if you don't know you have Shatness in your Beged, is that a significant enough problem that you should have to be posted if you will be Shuk or not? You know, that was a side point. In the Beis Halevi, he discussed, he said, look, you have to analyze what the nature of the Isser of Shatness is. Is the Isser an Isser of Levisha? Obviously, only certain kinds of Levisha are also the kinds that have Hanah. But the Isser is the Maisa Levisha, or he wanted to say, is the Isser the Maisa Levisha, or he wanted to say, is the Isser the Hanah you get? The Maisa Levisha is Heter, it's the Hanah that's Usser. So he had a subtle Chakir there, is the Isser the Maisa Levisha and Hanah is a Tznai, or is the Isser the Hanah and the Levisha is just the Hechitimsi? On that, the Chakir says, and at the end he suggested that might depend exactly what you're doing. If your mom is wearing it, putting it on, then maybe the Mais Levisha is with Usser. If it's just Halah, you're just draping it over you, then maybe only the Hanah is Usser. But, and the Rav Lichtenstein pointed out, I think basically we also quoted the Ramban and Shabbos, who's mashing that the Isser is the Hanah and not the Levisha. That's who says, yeah, there's nothing to do with the Sugyas of Segregation of Lonichale. It's really, it's, you know, if you're not really miscommon to be Nene, then it's nothing. Okay, that's actually taking a subtle step further, but not for now. Lemaisa, what Rav Lichtenstein just says in the end, is that in terms of our Sugya, it would fit much better into our Sugya if the Isser is the Levisha, then it would be, get a little harder to fit Mochik Sus into our Sugya. Because that doesn't seem parallel to Hanah Balavad and Malkarcha. Here, you're doing the Levisha. What? Correct. That's what I meant. Sorry. If you, even that gets a little tricky, but according to some Beitzel, but correct. If you say that the Isser is the Levisha, then you should start equating our Sugya Shabbos Daf Chof Tes. And there's only one kind of Sugya, not two kinds of Sugyas. But if you want to rescue this Pshat in our Sugya that says, no, our Sugya is a little different because I know it's coming to Yom Karcha, then you could say a little, You could say, no, the Levisha is not Usser all in Klayim. Levisha's Klayim is Heter Gomer. It's only when the Hanah comes to you that it's Usser. And in this case, you're doing Levisha that is totally Mutter. And then, after you put it on, the Hanah comes to you, so it starts raining, or it gets sunny, or it gets cold. And so really, it is like our case, where you're not doing anything to get the Hanah. You are just doing a totally innocent act of putting on this clothing. And then, based on the weather, and based on the temperature, all of a sudden, Hanah might start coming to you. All of a sudden, Hanah might start coming to you. So maybe it really is a case where Hanah is coming to you and you're not doing anything to get Hanah because you put this on, the Heter Gomer, and it's perfectly fine to wear this. It's not even like it might be a Maisa Aveira depending on whether we term you get Hanah. It's never a Maisa Aveira to wear it. It's just when the Hanah comes, that's a problem. So then when the Hanah comes, you were wearing something totally fine, and then it happened to be a bad turn of weather, and it turned out that you got Hanah from this. It happened to get so cold you started to get Hanah from it, or it happened to start raining and you started to get Hanah from it. So that's really could be Hanah Ba'olam Al-Karcha and could rescue this shot we called the Rebbe David. Then he just pointed out at the end, the Beis Halevi already points this out, that when it comes to the Chakir and Shatness, you might want to be Mechalking Halah and Levisha, and that gives up the question of whether the Mochik Sus are allowed to wear it or only to drape it over themselves, which is big enough to mean it's for modern day trying on suits, etc. And he pointed out that in the table of contents of the Mishkanos Yaakov, says there's a shud about it, but it got lost from inside. You know, you can find a few places in the Achronim deal with it. So that's an issue which you have to be mevarer and get more into when you get to the Shabbos part of the sugya.
You throw in the possibility of using the sugya to help in
modern days. Oh, it's in the end. He pointed out, I mean, this is really, you know, this really you need to get into it. The question is, this whole sugya of E.F. Shavu'lo Kamachavim, and that be an interesting lumbus, like, you know, we seem to possibly know no difference in Efsher and Efsher. Would there ever be a case where maybe there would be a difference in Efsher and Efsher? You know, but this whole idea of Hanah Ba'olam Malkarcha, would you really use this? Because Man HaZed, that can be matter a lot of things. That gets into a lot of lumbus about each particular thing. He said that he hasn't seen a lot of people use this Heter. He said Rav Amital likes to use this Heter. You know, when people are stuck, I don't know, you go someplace and the girls are singing and whatever, so you could say, ah, even though it's Hanah, Balu and Balkarcha, and it's not Machavin, and it's even the Efshar. So that's, he just left that as a Chomer Lamach Shavah.
according to Rashi and the Beita, why isn't it two actions, or one action, why isn't it the greatest?